It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The tobacco farmers left in our region are finding themselves increasingly in competition with foreign tobacco sellers.
We need a tariff on tobacco coming in from other countries. The man in Washington needs to do that for us. There's a lot of people, especially in eastern Kentucky, that had small crops. That was their livelihood.
We'll have that story coming up in just a bit. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A fatal six-vehicle crash closed long stretches of the Pennsylvania Turnpike Sunday in Westmoreland County. State police say the accident occurred before dawn when a tour bus heading west hit an embankment about 30 miles from Pittsburgh. Renee Colborne is with the Turnpike Commission.
The bus overturned, and then three tractor trailers were involved after that.
Five people died in the crash. About 60 were injured, though most have been released from area hospitals. Federal officials are joining state police in investigating. It's been more than a year since the video game Fallout 76 was released. The game takes place entirely in a post-apocalyptic West Virginia, and players from around the world work together to reclaim the land. The game is part of a series of popular video games created by Bethesda Game Studios based in Maryland. Researchers and gamer Nick Bowman moved to West Virginia 10 years ago to work at West Virginia University. Today, he works at Texas Tech University as an associate professor of journalism and creative media industries. But last year, he and a group of researchers were curious about how the game Fallout 76 might affect players who were not native to West Virginia. He found non-natives forming emotional connections with West Virginia by playing Fallout 76. Liz McCormick spoke with Bowman via Skype to learn about the study.
Tell me a little bit about the study, kind of those early days when you were starting to think, I really want to study this emotional impact of this game.
Oftentimes when a gamer gets involved in one of these online worlds, their entire time will be spent in one area. And I started thinking to myself, kind of, you know, myself being a transplant to West Virginia, what is it like to be a transplant to a digital West Virginia where you're spending, you know, 10, 12 hours a week in sort of fantasy, but kind of anchored in reality West Virginia? And then I got to thinking to myself, you know, just by population alone, West Virginians aren't going to carry this game. I think we're in the lower 50 states in terms of population size. So just by probability, if you were to grab somebody in the video game in Fallout 76 and ask them where they're from, it's very unlikely they're going to be from West Virginia. So that, coupled with the fact that Bethesda and Fallout is such a majorly popular franchise, you're going to have folks from all over the world play in this game. So for me, it was an opportunity to look at a group that probably doesn't know very much about our state, doesn't know much about Appalachia, but is going to be spending probably 40 to 50 hours a month there. And I was curious to find out if there would be a correlation between spending time in this video game and actually fostering a sense of connection for the real West Virginia that's represented in the video game.
So you spoke for your study, you spoke to a little more than 550 individuals. Were those individuals all from out of state, out of West Virginia?
About 20 to 25% of them were West Virginians. And we defined a West Virginian as somebody who was born there, who was raised there, or who was currently living there. So the other 75, 80% had never touched West Virginia, never heard of West Virginia, other than knowing it's a state.
And talk with me a little bit about those details that you started to discover. I know you did a set of follow-up questions 2 weeks after the game's launch, and then you did follow-up questions 2 months after the game's launch. What were some of the eureka moments, the big things that you discovered?
We recruited these people, and we talked to them before the game even came out. And some of the things we asked them about were just what they knew about the state, how they felt about the state, their emotional connections to the state. After about 2 weeks of gameplay, we went back in and we looked at the same questions and we analyzed those. The non-native scores had increased significantly. And in fact, the non-native scores were as high as the native West Virginian scores. So that was 2 weeks after playing. Well, 2 months later, we went back, talked to the same people, analyzed the data. So what we found in the 2 months after play, the non-natives, their scores about how much they knew about the state, how close they felt to the state, were as high as natives. That effect stayed for 2 months. And this really fascinated us because what it suggests is that when you do spend a lot of time in these digital worlds that might sort of represent the geography and the culture of a place, one of the results of that is you start attaching yourselves to that place. Maybe you want to go tour it more. Maybe you find yourself buying t-shirts with West Virginia on them, even though you live in Oregon. And it has a lot of power, not only for digital tourism, but for maybe how players accept these digital spaces as kind of real.
Looking kind of down the road, the long-term impact of this game, it did have some negative reviews there at the beginning, some bugs. You know, what does that long-term look like? Is it positive for West Virginia, do you think?
I think it's going to be a drop in the bucket at the end of the day, only because the negative press probably turned a lot of players away from the game. So I think what you're going to find with this game is it's going to be a pretty niche audience. I think for those players and for the fans around that, and maybe folks rediscover it through that nostalgic experience, I think you might see a slight tick in tourism or a slight tick in interest. And so maybe this game wasn't the blockbuster Bethesda was looking for, and maybe this wasn't the tourism bombshell the Governor Justice was looking for, but it sets the wheels in motion so that when other folks want to do it, they can learn from the experience and they can start to take this notion of sense of place and apply it to other media products. So whether it's comic books or movies or films or maybe virtual reality experiences, it might suggest that there's something to this idea of getting people exposed, not through billboards and commercials like we usually do, but through other entertainment experiences.
That was researcher Nick Bowman speaking with Liz McCormick. Bowman's study on Fallout 76 earned a research award from the National Communication Association and is currently under review by a scientific journal that focuses on technology and human behavior. Bowman says the name of the journal is embargoed until the review process is over. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Cloudy skies through mid-morning, becoming mostly sunny today. Some gusty wind, highs in the 40s. Partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 20s and 30s. There's a chance of rain or snow tomorrow with highs in the 30s and 40s. Support for WVPB is provided by Cafe Cimino Country Inn, B&B Guest Accommodations, lunch served 7 days a week, and gourmet dining by the fireplace, Tuesdays through Saturdays. CafeCiminoCountryInn.com. The Kentucky tradition of the burley sale season took place in a Danville warehouse this past December, as it does annually. Although the sounds of the season are the same, Stu Johnson reports the scene has changed over the years since the days of flourishing tobacco harvesting.
A forklift moves a few more bales of tobacco onto the floor at Farmer's Warehouse. A little later, the first day of the traditional burley auction gets going.
This crop right here came from Rose Hill, Virginia. Man right over there. Y'all line up. Let's go.
$180, $79, $80 bill for that cotton. $80, $79.
Jerry Rankin has run the burley auction sales at Farmers Tobacco Warehouse for years. He fears this might be the last go-round in this warehouse because of the cost of rent compared to the burley income. Rankin, who has raised well over 50 crops of tobacco, says that wasn't always the case.
At one time, this was a 22 million pound market, and never since 1950 did we drop below 1, 2, and 3 in the top averages. It was one of the top markets in the whole entire 8-state Burley Belt.
While Rankin is not sure cigarette consumption rates have fallen as much as reported, he is convinced that an already diminishing tobacco farming business in states like Kentucky is being hurt by companies buying leaf from other countries.
We need a tariff on tobacco coming in from other countries. The man in Washington needs to do that for us. There's a lot of people, especially in eastern Kentucky, that had small crops. That was their livelihood, and now they don't have that.
Earl Robinson of Danville joined about 24 growers on the warehouse floor that day. He says it's understandable that it's difficult to compete with foreign-grown tobacco.
People don't understand, like a foreign country, you may just get one meal a day, and you got to sell your product however you can get for it. And that's why it's so cheap. People don't understand why everything's much cheaper in foreign country. They have no choice.
Philip Morris, tobacco company spokesman Steve Callahan, says the vast majority of purchases are from U.S. growers, but the cigarette maker does buy some leaf internationally as well. Macy Lanehart of Berea is a grower who has also seen tobacco crops come and go for more than 4 decades. On this day, she was waiting anxiously for the sale to start. This is yours right here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are you thinking?
I'm hoping to bring good.
Bring how much good?
I don't know. Good enough we can get by this year.
Not all tobacco farmers are only interested in selling. Leroy Lauterbach came to Central Kentucky from Georgetown, Ohio. This farmer came to the sale to see about buying some leaf.
They're just like there's some tobacco here that the bales don't weigh enough. If I can get them bought at fair market price, we'll take them home and bale them up to where they have the right weight in them and to sell them that way.
Auctioning of tobacco in warehouses across Kentucky was prevalent decades ago, but for close to 20 years now, there's been another option, contracting directly with tobacco companies. As the Danville Receiving Station began accepting tobacco deliveries earlier this month, longtime Madison County tobacco farmer Eddie Warren brought bales to the station. And, for the first time, he said he and other growers had to take their tobacco back home.
We've had tobacco before that was, we've had unfavorable curing conditions, that the color was not good. Matter of fact, I've seen it lots worse than what we had this year. Yeah, that's the first time that just basically tell you we can't use it.
Steve Callahan of Philip Morris said the manufacturer values the long-term relationship with growers and is committed to working with them.
The situation we found ourselves in this year is that due to the undesirable weather conditions, we have rejected more Burley tobacco than we have historically. Basically, we found that it's lower quality and unusable tobacco.
Callahan said Philip Morris knows it presents a challenge to the growers, and it's working to try to figure out what to do to address the situation. Warren, meanwhile, says the company did accept some tobacco the following week. While he once focused most all of his farming efforts in the tobacco field, Warren says these days it's one of three sources of income.
It all works good together. It's with me still growing a little bit of tobacco and my wife taking care of the flowers. Of course, we've got the cattle. It all meshes together pretty good, and tobacco is still a significant part of the income.
Although some Kentucky farmers are turning more of their attention to hemp these days, neither Warren or Rankin from Danville are sold on hemp yet. In comparing tobacco and hemp, UK ag economist Will Snell says tobacco represented a quarter of cash receipts in the 1990s. Now he says it's more like 6%. And while hemp production is increasing, Snell says it's only about 1% of cash receipts. So tobacco may be down, but it's certainly not out in Kentucky. I'm Stu Johnson in Lexington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.